Rabbit Hole, your favorite Bitcoin podcast.
But I don't want to go among mad people.
Oh, you can't help that. Most everyone's mad here.
What's up, everyone? It's your boy Kaz. I'm here to tell you about Swan Bitcoin. Swan Bitcoin is the best way right now to buy Bitcoin. They allow you to dollar cost average into it on a daily, weekly, or monthly basis, and then withdraw to cold storage, self-custody those keys. Don't wait for the perfect time to buy Bitcoin, because the perfect time to buy Bitcoin was yesterday. Start dollar cost averaging with Swan and start sacking some sats. Go to swanbitcoin.com/Kaz. You'll get $10 worth of Bitcoin when you sign up. Hope you enjoy this episode of Down the Rabbit Hole. What's up, Mr. Joe Rogers? How are we today?
Good. Glad to be here.
Yeah, man. I'm excited. So this one's going to be a little bit of a different sort of episode. Obviously, we'll probably talk about Bitcoin at some point. But you're sort of our resident expert in 3D printing. And tell us about a little bit more about what else you do, like with Words and Bitcoin Magazine and, you know, all, sure, all your interests.
Well, I take that as a high compliment, the resident expert. I feel like I'm definitely not an expert. I just know enough to be a little bit dangerous about 3D printing. So I want, first of all, give a shout out to our friends at Crypto Cloaks. They have a fantastic Telegram community. So, you know, first thing to do, if you're into 3D printing, and maybe at the end of this episode you are, I'll share some resources and places you should go. But Crypto Cloaks has got a fantastic resource. You can find him on Twitter. And anyways, so start off with that. But so, yeah, some of the things that, you know, I'm interested in is first and foremost, Bitcoin, of course. And I run a monthly Bitcoin journal called Words Bitcoin Journal. And you can find it at bitcoinwords.github.io. And essentially every month I kind of curate all the best Bitcoin articles and tweet storms that I come across. And I put them in a nice handy journal format and put out a PDF to accompany it as well. And I've been doing it for, I don't know, almost 2 years now. And it's given me a reason to read a lot. And it's helped me kind of get an eye for who's who and helped me learn a ton about Bitcoin in the process. And I guess most recently, just started a part-time gig with Bitcoin Magazine, helping them on the contributor side. So as part of my efforts with Words, I do know a lot of the people writing think pieces out there. You know, part of the goal for me with Bitcoin Magazine is to kind of do some outreach to some of those folks and, you know, try to get them to contribute their thoughts on bitcoinmagazine.com. So that's kind of me in a nutshell.
Yeah, and this is where we touch on the personal sovereignty or self-sovereignty aspect of it. And so would you say that Bitcoin led you to this 3D printing rabbit hole?
Yeah, I would definitely say that. I would say that because, well, Bitcoin got me kind of reinvigorated about technology and obviously sovereignty. And then as you're going down that rabbit hole of sovereignty, I don't know, it kind of fell into my newsfeed about 3D printing guns. And, you know, I'm a big time Bill of Rights guy. And the Second Amendment means a lot. And when you understand, you know, the impact of cryptography and Bitcoin and the fact that it's code and it can't be stopped, you know, once it's created, you can't uncreate it. And then you start thinking about the implications of going from that same principle, but to the physical world with being able to create, you know, a weapon or anything for that matter from code. I think that's really powerful and transformative. But Bitcoin, absolute, to answer your question, yes, it brought me to 3D printing guns specifically.
One of the interesting parts about Bitcoin, whenever you talk about some sort of legislation, like if they were to try to outlaw it, it falls under free speech because it's code, which is just text, which is essentially speech. And that same thing applies to the source code and sort of the 3D models used to make, in this case, guns, which is obviously, this is going to be a highly contentious podcast. So if you're not into guns, you probably won't want to listen to this one. But we obviously are. And, you know, as sort of I wouldn't say libertarians. Like, I'm more on the libertarian side. I'm not not sure where you are. Obviously, to some degree, I'm sure you are if you're into Bitcoin. But it's more just about personal liberties. And one of those is I should be able to have a weapon if I want to. And we had, like, I saw this week, actually, is one of the guys that you recommended for me to follow on Twitter around the sort of maker space that's going on with 3D printing. And he put out something that said, like, Biden was planning on basically dox everybody, that if you're buying a 3D printer or if you're essentially, like, you know, not hiding your tracks and you're using these models online, they could potentially track you.
Yeah, it was like, but they want a KYC if you purchase blueprints, per se.
Exactly. Yeah.
But I mean, the big loophole is, like, purchasing. I mean, a lot of the files are free and open source.
Right.
Yeah. I don't think he understands how the internet works, but yeah, I think that kind of goes hand in hand. And something I didn't touch on. So this year at Big Blah Boom, you were there, but I gave a speech explicitly about this topic at Underground Citadel, which is, for those of you out there who don't know, it's one of the kind of sister conferences of the Bit Blah Boom. So it's kind of the day before it starts. It's just a little mini sovereignty conference. So my presentation was about 3D printing and sovereignty. But I think that, you know, you kind of hit the nail on the head. I'm definitely falling to the libertarian camp. And the implications of 3D printing guns, I mean, it's something that it kind of changes everything, because, like you said, the gun file, you know, the printer is physical, but it's just a printer. It's just a tool. And then the files themselves, you know, they're just reference points on an XYZ axis. And it's also just code. So when you hear politicians thinking and talking about any kind of legislation that would limit the distribution of these files or the creation of working on these files, man, it gets really hairy really quick when you're thinking in, you know, a 20th century mindset, because, you know, they want to frame legislation around, you know, physical guns, but, you know, this is code, and code is recognized as speech, and the Supreme Court has already upheld that code is speech, and it, you know, essentially can't be regulated in that way. So I think that this is just a new paradigm. This is the sovereign individual thesis, you know, taking form, and this is a good thing for anyone who believes in the individual and believes in liberty.
So I think it'd be cool to go into it, like, obviously not from a super presentation formally.
Sure.
But like distilling all the topics that you sort of presented at the satellite event of BitBlock Boom.
Yeah.
Like, you sort of started at the sovereign individual level. Some people may not know what that is. I'm sure if you're a Bitcoiner, you've read The Sovereign Individual. But, like, how does the sovereign individual relate to now Bitcoin and now this revolution in 3D printing?
Awesome. Yeah. So before I get into this, for any listeners out there, all this stuff, you know, gun related, this presentation, any of the links that I talk about, you can go to guns.team. That's the website. And it's kind of got all the links to everything I'm talking about. But to start off, first thing, you know, how does this relate to Bitcoin? Well, 3D printed guns enables, you know, the physical security of your Bitcoin. So that's a big thing and something that we care about. The next thing is the fact that it's, you know, free and open source development. You know, that's right in line with Bitcoin, since it is FOSS as well. But as we dig into it, and I'm just going to kind of highlight through the kind of presentation thesis, it's 3D printing guns. It is kind of the enablement of the sovereign individual. And Sovereign Individual is a book that talks about how governmental structure has changed over time due to technological shifts. So at a high level, we went from the feudal system to kind of the rise of the church. And that was led by the agricultural revolution. And then we went from the power of the church to the nation state. And that was enabled by the Industrial Revolution. And the last one is from the Industrial Revolution to, I'm sorry, the nation state to the sovereign individual. And that will be enabled by the information revolution, namely, you know, the microprocessor. You know, from there, it's kind of the thought process is that, you know, ever since the United States was formed, you know, that was a big step forward in, you know, liberty for man. But ever since the state was formed, the state has just been constantly chipping away at individual liberties. And now we've got all kinds of gun, gun bans and laws in place that kind of limit what you can do to protect yourself. And then back in 2013, Cody Wilson dropped the Liberator, which was kind of the first 100% print at home firearm. And that kind of changed the whole conversation, because now this put a firearm in the information age. You know, it put it in the data domain, which just totally kickstarted this new information revolution when it comes to physical security. So since then, I don't know if it makes sense. I talked a little bit about the things that have been brought to market. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think that makes complete sense.
Okay. The timeline, like just from 13 to present day, we've seen some pretty radical technologies been developed. So first is the Liberator. That was back in like 2012, 13. Shortly thereafter, that same team, they rolled out a printable AR receiver. So an AR-15,
Go back just real quick. So the Liberator was a handgun, right?
Oh yeah. Okay. So Liberator was a single,
like what model?
It's a single shot pistol that shoots a 22 round ammunition, which is very small, very inexpensive, but it's a single shot. But the thought behind it is, okay, well, that's not going to do a lot. That can't stop a lot. But when Cody Wilson released it, the idea was that no law enforcement or the state, you know, now they don't know who cannot arm themselves, because now everyone can be armed. So that kind of changes the way the state has to deal with a citizen, because now they don't know who is armed and who is not. So they have to proceed and tread very lightly. And I would say respect people more, because they don't know who is armed. I hope that makes sense. So that was the Liberator. So what's interesting is with each of these advancements, the opponents to this kind of development is constantly moving the goalpost. So when the Liberator came out, they said, oh, great, single shot. You'll never develop anything meaningful beyond that. You know, that can never do a lot of damage. Well, shortly thereafter, that team who developed the Liberator, they developed a way to 3D print a AR-15 lower receiver. And so what that is, with an AR-15, it's technically two parts. You have the upper and a lower. The upper is what the barrel is connected to, and it receives the bullet. The lower part is what the magazine that holds all the bullets and the grip and the trigger are connected to. In the U.S., the lower receiver is technically considered a weapon. Everything else you can buy unregulated. You could buy them on eBay. Literally all the parts you can buy on eBay, except for that lower receiver, because that's what the ATF considers a gun. So when they dropped that, now people who had access to a 3D printer could print themselves a lower receiver and buy the rest of the parts to the gun online without any kind of KYC. And now they can assemble themselves an AR-15. So you can imagine that threw a bunch of red flags with opponents. But this is a good thing, because it lowered the barrier to entry for people to be able to arm themselves. And it was one step closer to, you know, fully printing a semi-automatic gun. The next big notable kind of development, in my opinion, was the Glock 9mm magazine. And believe it or not, this was a really important part, because the guys who designed it said, you know, it's really difficult to get the dimensions just right to have bullets stack properly and feed properly. Cause you know, you're talking a bunch of cylinders in a tube feeding, up into a single stack. So that was kind of a difficult thing. So they released, the 16 round magazine and a 30 round magazine. And from there, now that they had a standardized magazine, which was a very, very important part, now they could start building around it. So once the magazine was developed, shortly thereafter, the Glock 9mm, the G17 and G19, which are the 9mm pistol models, they released the frame designs. So now anyone with a plastic 3D printer can print a magazine and a Glock 17 or 19 frame at their house. And again, the frame is the part that's regulated. So you could buy the barrel, slide, and trigger assembly, everything else that's needed on the internet. Again, this lowers the barrier to entry for people to, be able to arm themselves.
An important comparison between the two. So you said his name was Cody Wilson that created the Liberator, right?
Right, right.
So Cody Wilson is like Satoshi Nakamoto. He basically took an idea that and put it out into the world. And a bunch of people started after that to just come together. And they said, we like this idea. We're going to start building and basically exponentially increased the new technologies that were being built around 3D printing guns specifically.
Absolutely. I think also for our Bitcoin friends out there on the Satoshi Nakamoto Institute website, which is run by our friend Michael Goldstein and Pierre Richard. Cody's one of the founders, and I think he's still listed on the website. So he was part of that group of early Bitcoin thinkers down at University of Texas. And so I'd like to throw a shout out there for him. But yeah, once he created it, it's one of those ideas. Like Bitcoin kind of just grew organically, and once it was in the wild and people understood like what it really means, it just kept growing and growing. And that's what's happened in this space, because sure, there was a community of gun builders at their house that were probably like restoring old guns, and they were hobbyists just like building gun kits and things like that. But when they went to the realm of being able to 3D print a gun and complex parts and customize them, that got a lot of people really excited. So absolutely. Have you seen development, specifically on Bitcoin, just kind of exponentially grow? The development on this 3D printing gun front has done the same thing. Not only just the number of people involved, but the number of designs. I mean, if you look back a year ago, it was pretty easy to keep up with, all the different projects that were out there. But now there's just so many, because there's so many new ideas and people in the space. It's really hard to keep up with everything that's happening.
It's exactly like what's happening with the Lightning Network right now.
Yeah. I mean, it's just kind of, because it is free and open source, the development of Bitcoin and Lightning, developers are free to develop what they give a shit about. They can spend their time and efforts and energy on, what excites them. And that's the same thing. We're talking free and open source, and now we're talking firearms. So if someone's really pumped about getting, designing a frame for a specific model that they really love, they can make it happen. They just have to sit down and design it, or find someone who can design it and, put a bounty up. That's kind of common in this space. A lot of bounties, you see those. But yeah, it's free and open source, and it's kind of the Wild West right now.
I wonder how many of those bounties are being paid in Bitcoin and sats.
Yeah, it's funny. I would say that more and more are being paid in that. Because what we're seeing is some of these, guys and companies that are kind of supporting this 3D printing space, they're being deplatformed already. So there's one shop that sells rails. Rails are, they're a metal component that's necessary on, whenever you're building these Glocks and you print the plastic frame. Rails are pieces of metal that connect the slide, which is the part that moves back and forth, to the plastic frame. So they're an important part, and you need them to be made out of metal. But they specifically make those rails very, very inexpensively, but they were using, I think, some of the standard processing platforms like Stripe. I can't remember, maybe PayPal. And they were deplatformed on both of those, and they weren't selling anything explicitly like gun parts, that not even a regulated part, but it's something that those platforms didn't agree with. So now they are definitely standing up BTC pay server instances.
It's what we go back to all the time. Censorship.
Exactly. Censorship resistance. I mean, it's kind of the core thesis of Bitcoin. And I mean, it's interesting because there's overlap between the communities. There's 3D gun guys who don't give a shit about Bitcoin. And then there's Bitcoiners who really don't give a shit about guns. But then there's also, I think, a huge overlap that give a shit about both. And that's kind of the camp that I fall into.
Absolutely. I mean, there's multiple definitions to a multi-sig setup, and they're both for Bitcoin security.
Yeah, exactly.
So what was the next revolution after the Glock?
So there's been some more, but there's been two really exciting ones here in 2020. The first one is the Plastikov. And if the name doesn't give it away, it's a 3D printed Kalashnikov, also known as the AK-47 receiver. So again, throughout all these advancements, opponents kept moving the goalpost. Oh, you'll never do this. You'll never do that. Surely you'll never be able to print anything important with an AK-47. Well, now you can 3D print at your house AK-47 receiver. Again, that's the lower part, the regulated piece of the gun. But then this year, the really big one, what you still need to buy parts for the, for that model. You know, you still need the barrel, you still need the upper and a bunch of other parts you still need to purchase. But the big development, the one that I think is just really revolutionary, was the FGC9. And that stands for Fuck Gun Control 9mm. And it was dropped earlier this year. And it is a gun that you completely print at your house. And if you can't print it, you can buy the components at the hardware store in order to make it. And it is built around that Glock 9mm magazine that we talked about earlier. So it takes that, and it takes an airsoft gun trigger assembly. And besides that, literally everything else you can get from the Home Depot. And, you know, it is a semi-automatic, reusable. The ones that they've tested, they have over, 3,000 rounds through them now. So highly reliable firearm. And a lot of the prime developer, he came out of the middle of Central Europe, where guns are very, very highly regulated. His name is Jay Stark, 1809. And he very outspoken about the necessity of the Second Amendment, because they don't have that in Europe. So that's why, all the development that we've been talking about is, the lower receiver part. But in America, we're lucky because you can still acquire the other components of the gun and build, yourself a gun unregulated. But in Europe, it's very, very difficult to get some of these part kits. Pretty much anything gun related, you need some kind of favor or some kind of special piece of paper that says you're allowed to do it. So when the FGC9 came and it was developed straight out of Europe, the sole purpose of this was to make it so anyone in the world can make it. I think that the reason that also, it's just so excited is because the fact that it's developed there in Europe, where it's highly regulated, and it's by far the most advanced development that we've seen, it just goes to show you that, since it's software, since it's free and open source, this really can't be stopped. This is a revolution. It's going to change. Everything has changed moving forward because of, a piece of technology like this. You can't put the genie back in the bottle. The files are everywhere on the internet. And we're already seeing version 2 being developed now where they've got improvements to the design. So to think about how far Bitcoin has come in 10 years and to see how far 3D printing has come in 8 years. It's wild.
Joe, how long do you think it'll be until some nation states and potentially the U.S. start to outlaw these unregulated parts or start to regulate them completely? So it's like, you can print the certain parts of the gun, but the parts that you have to buy that are metal are much harder to obtain.
That's the thing, because I would say the answer is sooner than later, but that's them moving the goalpost again. Because the FGC9 is literally made from everything over the counter, except for literally the trigger assembly, which you can either use like an AR-15 trigger group or an airsoft gun. So that shoots little plastic pebbles or BB guns. Everything else, what are they going to regulate? Are they going to regulate the hydraulic tubing that is used to make the barrel. You know, if they do that, well, the developers will find another material. So now they're going to go down this rabbit hole of just outlawing random raw materials because they may or may not be used. So it's a really slippery slope. You know, do I think that they'll do it? Yes, they'll try. But I mean, they will, if a citizen wants to make one of these, they will be able to do it and arm themselves. And that's something they will not be able to stop someone who wants to do this.
So let's break it down for somebody that may not understand totally how a gun works, because this is one of the first questions that I asked you when I saw you at BitBlock Boom. And your response to me was, well, do you know how a gun works? And I was like, well, from a very, very high level, but not really. So explain to somebody why it's still safe for them to 3D print a gun and it's not going to blow their hand off.
Yeah, you should be very cautious when doing this. So do your research, tread lightly, you know, like be careful, wear eye protection, etc. But the idea that you're going to blow your hand off is a very, very common thud that you hear. For example, if you are 3D printing and you're worried about, you know, something like that, well, the explosion that propels a bullet, it happens, you know, within a barrel, which is made out of metal. So the thought of that exploding and taking your hand off, I mean, that would mean this metal barrel has to explode. And that's just like based off the physics of that metal, it's just not happening. But I get the concern. Let's go a step back. So that would be like explicitly like on a gun that you're printing the whole gun. But if you're printing, you know, just a Glock frame and you're in the United States and you're able to purchase a barrel and slide and rails, you know, and all the other parts, you know, the upper part of the Glock, all that stuff is the same stuff that you'd put on a normal Glock. The only thing that you're printing is the frame, the regulated part. So there wouldn't be anything to blow up in your hand because all the explosion again is happening in all those metal components that I mentioned. But with that being said, I mean, this is still new, and you know, these designs are, you know, designed by hobbyists, and generally they are putting hundreds of rounds before any design before they release them to the wild, because they don't want anybody to get hurt. But you know, it's always a risk that you're taking. I hope that makes sense, and I'm not trying to skate around the question, but you know, there's places that explosions happen on the gun, and that's generally inside a barrel, and those barrels generally don't blow up.
So tell me a little bit more about how they're making these parts. I know you explained it a bit in person.
Sure.
Are they lasering these things, and how are they doing this?
No, the big piece that needs to be manufactured right now that's a real advancement is around the barrel. And I don't recall off the top of my head who developed it. It was a team of guys, but they're using a process called electrochemical manufacturing, ECM. And essentially they take a piece of hydraulic tubing that's about the diameter of a 9mm round. And then they're 3D printing a spiral cylinder, and in the spiral grooves, they're running copper wire. And then they shove that kind of like cylinder with the copper wire that's in a cylinder shape inside the barrel. And then they're running electricity through that, and then they're putting it in a bucket of like salt water. And so a chemical reaction happens, and it literally will bore that spiral copper from the copper wire into the barrel. So they're able to actually rifle a barrel, which is pretty mind blowing, because if you wanted a barrel rifled, it used to be, you'd need, you know, thousands and thousands of dollars of machinery. And now you can literally have a water pump and an electric battery, and if you have a 3D printer to print the spindle in the middle, And you know, just these basic over the counter parts, you can rifle a freaking barrel. And that's a huge accomplishment. And that is a goalpost that, you know, was moved a long time ago, and then they nailed it this year. The rest of the parts on like the FGC9, there's a little bit of welding that's necessary. But again, you can get a welder over the counter on Amazon. They're listed for like $110. And it's just some basic metal parts that you'd need to cut down to size and weld them together. I'd say the most complex thing is probably the actual barrel manufacturing piece of it. And that's so exciting.
Let's touch a little bit more on the, so go ahead.
No, I was going to say it's exciting because, you know, right now, you know, this is Gen 1 and they have, you know, one kind of standard diameter that they've worked on, and it's kind of a shorter length, but also already in the community, they're machining longer barrels. So with longer barrels, with more rifling, we're talking more accuracy, which is, you know, again, adds to that whole free and open source thesis that people are developing whatever they want and they're able to share it with everyone and get a lot of instant feedback. So we're already seeing the FGC9s, which are built around kind of short range, I'm going to call it semi-automatic or assault rifle type platform. But you, now you're seeing longer barrels being built on. We're seeing the development of like suppressors. I mean, you're seeing some really wild stuff come on the scene very quickly.
Wow, suppressors, that's pretty cool. So touch on a little bit of the economics of it, because somebody who hasn't done research into this, the first thing they may be thinking is, well, shit, how much is a 3D printer? Like, I don't have a couple $1,000s. You know, at that point, I may as well just go buy a gun, right? So it's now you can do this for pretty cheaply.
Yeah, I'd say that the barriers to entry, number one, there is a cost. I mean, you're going to have to pony up a couple $100 to get started. But kind of once you get over the initial cost of, you know, getting the 3D printer itself, you know, you can start printing Glock frames for pennies on the dollar. And same with, you know, Glock magazines. A Glock magazine, for example, cost, you know, probably $20 to $30. And now you can print one for, you know, $3 max, you know, with the spring. So it dramatically lowers the barrier to entry to have some of these parts and components. But a 3D printer itself, the one that they all recommend in this kind of space is the Creality Ender 3. And I've seen them as low as $170. It's a very entry-level model, but it does everything that you needed it to do. And it doesn't have a lot of bells and whistles, so it's a manual machine. For example, you have to level the print bed and do a lot of things you have to do manual on it. But as a beginner, it's kind of good to understand that technology and understand the importance of bed leveling. And I don't know, I think there's something good about learning the manual way instead of just getting the Cadillac version. But $170 and with all the upgrades and getting a couple rolls of filament, I mean, we're talking less than $300 and you've got a pretty nice beginner setup. And that beginner setup, you will be able to print the, you know, most complex things. It's just by beginner level, I'm saying it's more manual than the more pro versions, which are kind of like point and click, if you will.
Since we're already talking about free and open source, you know, software, kind of like the difference between a lower level computing language and a higher level computing language, there's a lot more you have to do manually.
Yeah. And I mean, it's, I don't know, because we're taking something digital and then manifesting in the physical world. Things have to be kind of just right. And if you're getting started, you're going to mess up. You're going to have some bad prints. But that's just kind of part of the growing pains. But all the printers are different. And once you learn your printer, you'll get a feel for it and you'll kind of learn how to tune it just right. And that's part of the craftsmanship aspect of it. I think it's pretty cool.
This is my printer. There are many like it, but this one is mine.
Yeah, exactly.
This is the perfect segue into meme warfare. So had to throw in the little Full Metal Jacket quote since we were talking about guns and warfare now. But this is a different kind of warfare. This is not going to be, you know, relating to guns. But so start very high level, like I always like to do. What is meme warfare?
Well, I guess the first thing you got to do is understand, you know, what is a meme? I mean, so before I kind of went down this rabbit hole, of learning about memes and memetics. Memetics is, I guess, the study of memes. I just think of a meme as a silly like cat picture on the internet with a caption or something like that. But after a little bit further digging and reading, it kind of opened my eyes. So memes are essentially ideas that propagate themselves, and propagate means spread. They spread ideas that spread. And the idea kind of comes when you get into it, you start to really understand that almost everything is a meme. And if you consider ideas as memes, and then you start to think about how there's a constant competition for ideas to stay alive and to spread. And as you keep going down this thought process, you start thinking about organizations and big kind of worldview ideas. There are memes and collections of memes working together. That would be called a memeplex. And kind of military memetics and meme warfare is the idea of using memes to your advantage, to kind of advance your worldview on, a certain population. So that's kind of what it is at a high level. And this might sound crazy. I'll share the link with you. You can share it with everyone. But I've kind of put a bunch of different articles and resources together on a webpage. So that'll be in the show notes.
I mean, I'm sure a lot of what we're talking about is going to sound crazy to some people and then yeah. Others. Like if you've been on Twitter, like all it is like a giant meme. And that's really the way
everything today
in the digital. Yeah. In the digital age, that's how you spread an idea is you create a meme out of it. And then that's used to, like you said, propagate through the digital world. And that's how things go viral.
It is. But I mean, like even before the digital world, memes existed. I mean, memes are literally an idea that spread. So, I mean, like the big memes that are out there, like take Christianity, for example, that's like the OG, the big one, the biggest, most widespread. Because, back in the day, whenever it came around, the church started seizing its power by the use of memes. They were the authority. They were judge and jury, and they wielded the information, and they used memes about, their power and God and heaven and hell and et cetera, in order to take that power. And, it's memes. I think they go right in hand with like the sovereign individual, because now we have the rise of the nation state. And the rise of the nation state's because the people believe that the nation is the right meme. This is the right way to be governed. And the nation state meme is constantly propagated through things like, national anthem. Every kid is indoctrinated with the meme of the state. Not that this is a bad thing for anyone who's listening. I'm just saying it is what it is. And then, you pay your taxes and you do all of these things. You stop at the red lights, you obey the laws. I mean, like all these things are enforcing the state's power over us. Even if sometimes these are things you don't agree with, you still subjugate yourself to them, and it propagates the state's memeplex, which is, the collection of all these memes together.
That is a cosmic thought right there, Joe Rogers.
Man, I'm not the one who thought of it. I stumbled upon it, and but it had me thinking that, like you said, online, I think that Twitter is a, hardcore, it's meme warfare down in the trenches, because it's immediate. It's war of ideas nonstop and constantly. And I'm not the best at it. But I think Bitcoiners are pretty damn good at it. And I think go ahead.
Sorry. I was just going to, before we jump to the Bitcoin Twitter meme warfare idea. Sure. I wanted to touch on that idea you just had about Christianity and then, the role in nation states. And you were talking about it in a very sort of metaphysical sense. And I was sort of thinking in a physical sense. Like if you look at Christianity itself, like basically taking the image of Jesus on the cross, that has been propagated throughout history to basically symbolize Christianity for thousands of years now.
Sure.
And if you were to take the next idea of nation states, like the American flag essentially is a meme. It's an idea that's like distilled into nationalism.
Yeah, those are great. Those are both great memes because, I mean, symbols are memes. They pack a ton of information in a very small package. You know, if you see a cross, it tells a lot of fucking information. Same with the American flag. It tells a ton of information in a very small package.
I was listening to Joe Rogan's podcast the other day with the latest one with Edward Snowden. So he's done a couple. This is like the one from a couple weeks ago. They were talking about the idea of the Patriot Act, like calling it the Patriot Act, and just how like fundamentally messed up that is, because it's basically saying if you don't agree with this, then like you're un-American.
Yeah, but it's like Orwellian as hell.
It is. And it's like, yeah, but this act was a direct violation, and pretty much everything you believe in is if you're American. But like that's the propaganda behind it, is like that's the way that they meme it, is like if you don't agree with this, you know, like you're sort of saying you're against America.
Yeah.
And it's like, that's a great example of a meme.
I couldn't agree more. And the whole idea of just the state owning these, it's so rad. I'm sorry. I'm kind of dazing off here because I'm thinking about just the way that the state controls the narrative, you know, through mainstream media and just through laws and legislations. They have so much control over the narrative and over the memes and what we see and what we believe. But as I went down this rabbit hole of understanding what memes are, it kind of opened my eyes to like, holy shit, every idea is in constant competition to stay alive. And when you understand that they're like little viruses that come into your head and then you either spread them or they die with you and they don't get spread. That's pretty crazy to think about. Like libertarianism, I am a libertarian, so I identify with that. But once the idea of liberty came into my mind, you know, I interpreted that a certain way. But I wanted to spread that to everyone that I met because I'm like, holy shit, this changes everything. I wanted to propagate the meme because I thought it was a really good meme. It hit me very hard. I hope that makes sense.
Once you start seeing it through that lens, you can't really unsee it. It's like the idea of the Matrix.
Yeah, once you take the red pill and you see the world different, you know, there's no going back. And I view Twitter differently. I view the TV differently. I understand that these ideas are fighting for survival. And if I can do something to propagate the memes that I want, you know, I want to do that because I want my memes to win.
Hey, that's the whole thought of having you on the podcast and doing the podcast in general. It's because there's some stuff that I cannot get out of my mind, and I've got to spread it.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, this is a good way to spread some memes for sure.
So I was telling Joe in preparation for this show, I did some research on the link that I'll link you to in the show notes, sort of the resources he's put together. Watched a couple of videos about it. Watched Bitstein, you know, give a talk about it. And then, you know, subsequently went and created my first meme and tweeted it out. So I was bitten.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, that's a good thing. I mean, the idea of a meme, it influenced you. And then you formed a belief that memes are, hey, a good idea. And then you actually acted on it. You know, it's kind of that's the process.
I mean, I've always, obviously, everyone's seen them forever. And if you don't look at it through the lens that you just gave, like the context of like, no, there's actually a lot of thought process, educated thought process behind this. And it's not just like a joke, but it's like, what does that joke mean? Like existentially, like maybe it's really not a joke. Like they're trying to say something, even if it's like in a satirical sense. So I was, you know, in listening to, you know, like Michael Goldstein give his presentation, I was like, mm-hmm. Okay, this is actually like, you could actually have probably a college course on, you know, meme, like what, I can't even remember what it's called, but like basically the study of memes.
Yeah. You can. And there's been a lot of, very educated people do a lot of writing about it. But you know, when Goldstein gave his talk, that definitely lit a fire under my ass to understand the power of the memes. And I think, I don't want to just make this all about Goldstein's presentation, but I do want to tie it back to Bitcoin, because he pointed out some great things that I've kind of taken to heart. And, you know, why I think Bitcoiners have done so good at meme warfare, it's from some things that he pointed out. Not explicitly a three-word memes, but three-word memes, kind of a sweet spot. The fewer words, the better for a meme. But Bitcoiners have got a ton of three-word memes that pack a very big punch. Can you name a three-word Bitcoin meme off the top of your head?
Orange coin good, number go up.
Bitcoin fixes this.
Oh, yeah, Bitcoin fixes this. That's one of
my favorites. There's a ton of them, yeah. And there's more than that. But run the numbers.
Yeah, run the numbers.
Oh, I mean, all of these, okay. Whenever you apply those to a situation, they have a very simple meaning, okay? And it kind of just slaps the person who you say that to. Like, yeah, duh, orange coin good. Okay, it sounds so dumb and basic, but when you peel back the layers of the onion, it packs a fucking shit ton of information. Because is it good? Is it a good thing? Yes. It's backed by truth. It's free and open source. It's non-inflationary, you know, set supply, can validate it. You know, all of these things that we cherish is kind of packed into three words: orange coin good, number go up. Another one, price goes up, hash rate goes up. Blockchain number goes up, nodes go up, you know, everything goes up. It packs a ton of information. And then run the numbers. That's kind of the most recent one. Run the numbers. You know, that means to run a node. It means to validate your transaction, to verify your transaction, to examine the blockchain as far as that it is in line with all the other nodes that are out there, to being consensus with everything. So these very simple, short memes pack a very big punch. I think that's why Bitcoiners are propagating the Bitcoin meme so well. It's because of these really powerful memes that are being created.
Did you run the numbers, Joe?
I do run the numbers. I've got it running a couple of times. I'm running right now.
Of course, I'm sure you are. I just mean, did you run the numbers whenever at block, what was it, 650,000?
I did. I ran it then. Yeah. And, you know, to be able to, you know, dump in that command into the CLI and spit it out, that's pretty damn powerful.
It is. I missed it by three blocks. I was a little late getting home. But I could have done it through, like, fully noted, but I was like, nah, I'm going to run this one. Actually,
I didn't verify on 650. I did later that day. Yeah. But at the halving, I was on it.
It's the premise. It's the premise of like the fact that you can audit the supply of Bitcoin at any point in time. Anybody can do it. You know, if you're running a node and it doesn't exist with the dollar, doesn't exist with gold, and sure as fuck doesn't exist with Ethereum.
That's a fact.
Man, so what else do you have for me on the meme war front? How can we improve as Bitcoiners?
Okay. I don't know. I've been thinking a lot about it. I've been talking to some people and always yelling at my wife about this when I'm pissed off late at night. And she puts up with a lot of it, but I feel like as Bitcoiners, I don't know, I'm kind of going two ways here, but I think that we need to be more urgency and, I don't know, less Pepe the Frog and cat memes and more like interface revolution. I hope that makes sense. So more join or die, less Pepe the Frogs.
Yeah, the coin join or die meme was great.
I loved it. I mean, it's perfect. And I don't have the answer to it, but I think as Bitcoiners, you know, we're constantly evolving. And that's another thing about memes is that with each propagation, so every time they go from one person to another, they change a little bit. because they can't be copied exactly from person to person, because each person interprets a meme differently. So they can evolve. Memes can evolve over time. And that with evolution, they can also be improved upon. So that's why the ideas continue. I think the memes continue to get better and develop. And that's why Bitcoiners, you know, our narratives and the education and just all the tools being developed, they continue to get better because they, every time they propagate, they get a little bit better. I hope that makes sense. But the point I want to make is that I think that this next generation of memes and the next wave, I'm going to be trying and thinking a lot about, more kind of like resistance and revolution type language. And I think that all the other memes are going to continue, the fun memes, and they're good. But I'm going to be focusing more on the, a bit more serious, a bit more militant position. Mm-hmm. I'm not calling for anything militant related, but I am saying that, you know, that is, I think, an important conversation that we need to talk about.
It's an important idea to take from, right? If you look at how nation states came to power and like the ways that they used propaganda and the way that they basically distill ideas within their citizens, whether it's behind a flag, like this is where like the Citadel sort of flag came from, right? Like this is another just meme that has more of a revolutionary sort of connotation to it, rather than just a, you know, orange coin good. Like,
yeah, the Citadel meme is another huge one. I think the Citadel flags, and we've got a couple versions, and that's okay. But they pack a big punch. Like, yes, it's a silly flag, but if you understand what it means, it's a ton of information and it's a ton to unpack, you know, because Citadel theory, you know, it goes hand in hand with, you know, self-sovereignty and cooperation and Austrian economic. I mean, it packs everything into a very big punch, I believe. That's a great point.
Well, I mean, Citadel theory is just the idea like of free private cities. And if like, if you just look at how we like have created governments and how they've sort of gained power over their citizens over the course of time, like, you know, it all started with sort of citadels. Like we just didn't have a lot of money to begin with. Now it's going to be like, okay, we have more money, more control over our lives, whether that's physically or digitally. And we're going to have some sort of governments. And I saw a tweet a couple weeks ago that was like more governments, less government. Like,
yeah, that's beautiful.
It's more close to the citizens. Like if you're going to have a free private city, there has to be some sort of like the citizens coming together and saying, okay, as a body, we agree to this. But that is way different than the idea that government has empowered itself to today.
Yeah, I agree. You know, bring it local and have, you know, I think the goal would be, you know, voluntary, you know, be able to participate in a citadel or not, or go to another one if you didn't agree with all the rules that citadel had in place. And it's a slippery slope. I mean, in general, you know, power corrupts people. And I got to believe that there will be some bad citadels out there, you know, if and when, you know, we get to citadel theory, you know, comes to life. So there will be some bad ones out there, but, you know, my hope is that there will also be some really great ones that advance, you know, humans forward.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure there'll be some Mad Mask-esque citadels.
Well, that'll be the outside of the walls.
Siphoning breast milk from the women, you know, you get to drink water like once every 10 days.
Oh,
spraying
God.
Chrome in your mouth. Who knows?
You need to write this.
I just started working on my first Medium piece. I did. Yeah. So it's like, this goes back to the idea, you know, Bitcoin changes you. This is another meme right there. Bitcoin changes you. Three words. Before like you're, you know, before you change it, I wouldn't even consider myself like a great writer. You know, like I love to read, but I don't like, I'm not super great at, you know, writing. And I was actually, this was after my talk with Gigi. I was rereading Brandon Quittam's piece about mycelium, because, okay, I was like, man, I have a whole new, like, I read it like a year or so ago. And I like had that conversation with Gigi, which just got extremely cosmic. And I was like, I need to go back and reread this idea, like, you know, without what I have now and like sort of how I've changed in the past, you know, X amount of time since I've read it. and he sort of alludes to it in one little piece about, you know, there's multiple forms of like this distributed intelligence. And, you know, mycelium is one example. Obviously, Bitcoin has been like one of the more like recent examples. And I started thinking about dark matter. And I was like, man, dark matter is sort of like an idea of distributed intelligence. And then I was like, well, that kind of relates to, you know, the Big Bang Theory. And the Big Bang Theory is sort of like an immaculate conception. And that relates to like how Bitcoin was formed. And I was like, well, like, what if you just relate the idea of like, you know, distributed intelligence to like cosmic phenomena? And I was like, maybe I'm just going to start writing it. So I just started writing it.
And okay, I'm going to need pack the bong for that one, dude. That's going to be awesome. That's going to be good. I like a big cosmic read like that. That'll be killer.
I'm super into space. And I was just like, man, two things I love, Bitcoin and space. And like, I don't know if it's, you know, like if when you read like what Gigi writes and you read like what Brandon Quidham writes, like they distill it down to where it's like, wow, these things are like, you know, the just the way that it flows, it makes complete sense. I'm not going to say like, you know, you're going to come out of mine and be like Bitcoin and dark matter are the exact same thing. I just kind of want to draw like interesting comparisons and just like see what happens out of it. Like, it's like they kind of have similar properties in some like cosmic phenomenon as like different properties that Bitcoin has, and just, I don't know, see what comes out of it.
I want to read it already. And yeah, I think your inspiration from those two guys is well-founded, because they're both super thinkers and have definitely changed the way that I view Bitcoin. But yeah, I think you're onto something. I like the way your thought process is there. And yeah, I think that'll be another one that'll be interesting to read.
Hey, I appreciate it. I hope it turns out as well as it's like sort of clashing around in my mind right now.
You're going to just be beating around against the wall. Sounds for a really while. Good.
Oh, I already am. Like, I'm trying. Like, I've sat down like 10 different times on different days to like sit down and write it. And I'm just like, I'm making progress, but like, it's not coming out the way as eloquently as like it feels in my mind right now. Yeah. But you know, that's just because, you know, I don't write very much. So I just need to do it more and spend more time, I'm guessing.
I've written a couple articles, but I mean, nothing crazy. And it's very painful. And as a person who is not a writer per se, you know, I would have never just, you know, Bitcoin changes you, like you said, I would have never, you know, hit the keyboard and banged out an article if it wasn't for Bitcoin. But sometimes, you know, an idea gets a hold of your mind and you can't stop thinking about it. And you want to put it on paper, and it's not going to hurt anything to publish it, because that's, I can't remember who says it, maybe Naval, it's an asymmetric risk. To reward. Oh, yeah. You know, if it sucks, no one's going to care. But if it's good and it changes, you know, moves the conversation forward, that can have exponential effect. So you should, think that you should write it. I think you should hit publish, but do it when you're ready and, you know, no rush.
Hey, if Joe Rogers sits down and packs a bong and reads it, that's it. That's good enough for me.
That's a win.
I'm not trying to change the world with a Medium article. I'm just trying to, you know, put some interesting content out there that maybe somebody has or hasn't thought about, but maybe they haven't, you know, put it out in the world yet.
Propagate some ideas up in my head.
Let's make it into a meme.
Yeah, buddy. What else you got, man?
Hey, I'm fair game for anything.
I know. I'm thinking, are you planning on any conferences next year?
Oh, I mean, I already have tickets to BitBlock Boom.
Yep, I got mine.
I'm looking at Bitcoin 21 or 2021.
That the prices cool. aren't bad. It's just getting out there. You know, yeah, it's on out there, you know, yeah. Los Angeles. I mean, it'll be a lot of fun. I know that.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm in for BitBlock Boom 2021. That's going to be awesome. Any chance that you're going to be going to any of Gary's dinners? I know that there's one coming up. Maybe next Friday.
Yeah, I'm going to the one on the 16th.
I don't know if I'm going to make that one, but I definitely want to make a future one.
You're in Arkansas?
Yeah, not too far up the road.
How far is that for you?
Like 5.5 hours. 5 hours if I don't have any kids and wife with me.
That's a good little jaunt for just a dinner.
It would make sense for Bill. I mean, I would stay the night.
Yeah.
I would stay on someone's couch. I'd stay on you or Cucumber's couch or somebody there.
You're welcome to.
I just invited myself.
Well.
But then, you know, that's like three podcasts and you're there, you know, it's not that bad.
Yeah. See, that's the best part about driving now is hey, it's even more if you're listening on like 1.5 or 2X.
Oh yeah. You can crank through them. I wish my car drove itself. Cause then I'd be really productive, but by really productive, I mean laid back and just listening. are you a bullish on self-driving technology and all that?
Oh yeah, for sure. Are you?
Oh, 100. I don't want to be an alpha tester, but man, I'm ready for it. Like I'm ready to have a robot in my house that like cleans and stuff. And I'm ready to, you know, colonize Mars. I'm ready for all of that good stuff.
Oh yeah. I mean, I feel like if we just got rid of all drivers right now and we put like semi-autonomous vehicles, we would potentially still have less deaths than people who die in car wrecks, like even where the technology is right now. I could be wrong on that, and I'm willing to be wrong on that, but that's how bullish I am on just the technology in general. Is like, just look at the numbers of people that die every year in car wrecks, and you were to just take out drunk drivers, like, you know, I mean,
yeah, well, I mean, Uber had to help that. Uber had to help. I don't know. I haven't seen any stats on it, but Uber had to dramatically drop deaths related to drunk driving. And then when cars can do it themselves, I mean, it'll lower it even further.
I mean, it's an autonomous Uber.
Yeah. And then imagine whenever, you know, Tesla owns the fucking taxis then. I mean, Tesla should buy Uber, or they should merge. That'd be a logical merger.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I wouldn't want to take on all of the sort of debts that are around Uber. If I was Tesla and you sort of make the technology in itself, like you could just, you know, why not just make an app and like you can order a car to you that's autonomous, and Tesla has the engineers to easily do that and not deal with anything from Uber.
Yeah, that's some baggage for sure. But to think about what they're going to be able to do, you know, think about a Tesla whenever it's able to service itself and collect fees. I think that Elon was on Rogan talking about this. I can't remember where I heard it, but they were talking about the idea of when AI is possible, a Tesla cab could operate itself and collect its own revenues and pay for its own service, et cetera, on its own. You know, it could be its own bank and everything.
Yeah.
Which is kind of crazy to think about a Tesla being self-aware.
Yeah, essentially it's just going to be a lightning channel. it's going to be really cool, like what comes out of that though, like, because it's not just going to be Tesla the company. Like you could own a Tesla and that could be a business model for you. So it's going to open up the self-driving economy to where like, it's like, oh, I'm not going to use my, and you can just go like, I'm picturing like a calendar app on your phone. And you're like, oh, like I'm going to be asleep from this amount and this amount to this amount, or I'm going to be out, I'm not going to need my vehicle. And you can just like mark out little calendar spots for when your autonomous vehicle can like go and pick somebody else up and then earn like revenue
Uber for itself.
Yeah. Like everyone is going to be an Uber. If you own a vehicle, and then you have the option to not own a vehicle, and you can just
more like you wouldn't even need to own one because you can always summon one and you can just pay per ride and it'll be so cheap because it'll be so readily available and the tech will be so good.
I picture like, it's just, if you're going to have the opportunity cost, or you're going to have the cost to decide between, do you want to take the upfront cost and own an autonomous vehicle? I'm sure I have no idea like what the insurance side is going to look like when, you know, you're like, I mean, who knows how far in the future this is, but if like they're behind the wheel, if they could possibly take control of your car, even though it's autonomous, like I'm sure there's going to be that functionality. So how do you keep somebody from like doing that? I don't know. So there may be like, you know, incredibly high upfront costs with insurance and, you know, purchasing the vehicle, but like it's another revenue stream for sure. And then, or you could just be on the other side and be like, no, I'm just going to ride and, you know, pay a couple dollars for a ride whenever you need one.
Yeah. I mean, no one's going to drive. That just seems like the logical next step. You know, like we went from horse and buggy to fucking cars, and now we're going to go from cars that we drive to cars we don't drive.
And from
and that'll increase human productivity.
It will. And lifespan.
Yeah. Yeah. Two good things.
Yeah.
Bullish, bro. Kind of some cosmic ripping, you know, thinking about some weird things. These are just things I'm kind of excited about. What I am worried about is, you know, I want to speak next year at the Underground Citadel. I don't know what I'm going to do next year. I can't do the same damn topic.
You can.
Maybe just grow on it.
I need to find something to present. So I need to figure out what my niche is.
I was scared to death when Katie tapped me on the shoulder. Like, it was a Dirtbag Friday late night. It was a late night rip. And someone brought it up. And then I just went on this hardcore rant and started like, turned my webcam around and showed everyone my shit. And then Katie pinged me. She's like, you got to talk about guns at Bit Bop Boom. I said, okay. And so I had 2 months to prepare, a lot of time to prepare. And I'm glad I did because, you know, yeah, it's like when you, like what you're doing with the pod, you know, you're contributing to the space and to the conversation. And my, you know, small little conversation at Bit Bop Boom, it's adding to the overall conversation. And it feels good to be a part of the, you know, the advancement of that.
It is. I'm curious to see how Bitcoin and Bitcoiners are going to change like in the next couple of years. Like if we do see, you know, we see like 100K Bitcoin, you know, like how many more people are going to be part of Bitcoin, right? So Bitcoin Twitter is going to explode. And then you're going to start to see all these different subgroups, I feel like. And like you have like the people, like you said, that are interested in 3D printing and Bitcoin. Or you have people like Katie that are interested in Bitcoin and like how that enables you to freely move around the world. And then, you know, you have developers and then you have miners and you have like all these sort of different groups. And you have podcasters and, you know, all types of content creators. Like, it's just going to be interesting to see what things are like in the future. Like how many rabbit holes are there that we haven't discovered yet?
Yeah. I think that there's a ton. And there's so much more work and writing that needs to be done. And the reason I say that's because Bitcoin, it, in a way, if you're a believer, you know, it can affect everything that we touch. You know, when you talk finance, economics, politics, art, commerce, you name it, you know, Bitcoin can essentially touch it. Maybe not like mechanical engineering, maybe that's something that it can't touch. But what I'm trying to say is that we're going to see a lot more specialization as it continues to advance. And again, that goes back to the free and open source. So we're going to see more specialization in each of those disciplines, and it's going to be more people, and there's going to be more subgroups that come on board. I think the most recent one that is kind of obvious has been kind of the artist. Like over the past 2 years, there's been a real, maybe they've been out there, but I feel like they've been more present and more obvious is the kind of like Bitcoin artist and the crypto artist people.
Mm-hmm.
But I think we're just going to continue to see these new little sub niche groups come online. And that's because the meme continues to propagate and morph. And, you know, with every new person that gets brought in, well, they're going to spread it to their little micro communities. And that's just the nature of the Bitcoin meme.
Yeah. And I had a conversation with Phil Gibson a couple weeks ago. You know, he wrote that song. That's something I've never thought about. It's like writing a song that like influences people to think about Bitcoin.
Yeah. And then you've got like DJ Skrilla, who has been in Citadel 21, and he's been doing it for a couple years. And you've got just all the artists and the crypto artists. Have you had a chance to join any of these VR worlds that have art galleries in them?
I haven't. Tell me about this.
Yeah. So BitPaint, you can find him on Twitter as BitPaint. His website is bitpaint.club, and he's built a 3D world in VR chat, which is a game that you can download for free off of Steam. And he's built a like a world. It's a kind of a small map that you can explore, you know, with a 3D headset on or just a desktop computer or a laptop. And what he's done in this world is he's taken all the different Bitcoin related art from probably like at least 20 different artists, probably 21 artists. I don't know the exact number. And he's made an art gallery for each of these different artists throughout this world that he's built. And, you know, first time to experience anything like this. I mean, it's like a video game for sure, but we've got a VR world that you can go meet up with other Bitcoiners and observe and talk about Bitcoin related art. I mean, it's just like, it's so meta, but you can see that this is the future. This is where the world's going. And if you, once you experience a VR meetup, it'll change the way you view meetups in the future. I mean, the BitBlock boom and being in a physical world was really awesome, and I will try to do it every year I can. But through this whole 2020 crazy year, people had to adapt and change. And I think that these VR meetups are one of the big blessings because it allows people to get together. And I'm still talking about this because it's cool. If you've ever joined a Zoom call, for example, with, you know, more than probably 8 people, it's impossible. You have a couple of people talking and the rest of the participants just sit there and listen. Mm-hmm. It's non-productive. And if you've been in one, like for my work, if there's, you know, a 50 person Zoom call, it's very painful and it's not productive. And no one is getting anything done except for the person leading the conversation. In these VR worlds, it's as if you're at a real meetup. You're able to move around freely. And the way the audio is, the closer you are to someone, the louder they are, and the farther you are away from them, you know, the less volume they have. So you're able to like join a conversation, talk, you know, like join up, meet up and talking to Gigi and like, hey, Gigi, let's go over here and, you know, let's get cosmic for a second. And we can step away from the conversation and go down a rabbit hole. And someone is free to just walk over and join into the conversation as if we're sitting in a conference room or walking around a conference hall. And that's a way to connect that, you know, Zoom is not able to do. And it allows people from all over the world to get together in the same room and have that kind of conference experience. So I'm super bullish on where VR is and where it's going.
Okay, that's a pretty cool thought right there. So tell me, tell me more about like the physics of it. So you have an avatar, right? And let's say you and I are talking, you know, across the room and you say something, you know, like about Clancy. Does she like, can she hear it and then move instantaneously? Like, or is there actual, like a time delay of her walking across the room to get to you? Or can she just be like, oh, I heard you say that, and like be like right there instantly?
Yeah. It'd be like, it would literally be like in a party or like, you know, if you're at a bar, okay, and you've got a ton of people in a small space, it's going to be really loud and hard to hear things. So you might want to step away, you know, maybe over to the edge of the room and it'll be more quiet. But yeah, I mean, you can hear everything as long as they're within the, you know, the physical distance of that world, within earshot of whatever that volume is, the volume physics. They'll be able to hear it instantly. And, you know, they could walk over and it would get louder for them or vice versa. As they step away from it, your conversation would get, you know, lower. So that allows a very organic and natural way to communicate with someone rather than a Zoom call with 50 people. Nothing, like I said, in that kind of room, there's no way there can be multiple conversations at once. And it's not efficient for 50 people to be sitting around watching two people have a conversation. With VR, you're able to have more intimate conversations and break off into side conversations, come and go as you please to other conversations. So it was a very cool experience to get to do that this year.
So I might have to start hosting.
You should at least check it out, because BitPaint does a meetup, I think, every week or every other week. And he does that, I think, with the Australian Bitcoiners. And they'll do like, I think like 10 people show up and
Bitcoin down under.
Yeah, something like that, man. It's crazy.
Oh man, that's cool. Man.
Okay, and you don't need a headset either, bro.
Now I've got to buy... Oh, I don't? I was going to say, now I'm going to have to buy a 3D printer and a... Oh, really?
Yeah. I mean, I don't have a headset. It's more immersive if you do. But yeah, I do it on my desktop. That way I can still shit post on Twitter on my other monitor.
So is this like Club Penguin for Bitcoin meetups? Or it's not,
I don't know.
Real
what is
virtual reality then? It was just like, I don't know, a game back in the day that you could like have a little penguin avatar and you just watch around and like, I don't even know. But I mean, how is
I'm
it
too
VR?
Old for
if,
this.
How is it VR if, yeah, I forgot.
Your it's old, 2D.
Your old balls. Okay.
It's so, 2D, but you're in a virtual reality world and you don't have the goggles on.
2D VR.
Yeah, it'd be like walking around in a first-person shooter on your PC.
Okay, that makes
with your desk with your mouse and keyboard. So you like, you know, you control your head angle with your mouse and then your movement with WASD.
We should do a Dirtbag Friday that way.
We should, but I think there's so many just like old people who never work, just a bunch of boomers that can't figure it out. I'm gonna talk down to them and tell them that they'll never figure it out and they need to give it a try. That might motivate them. But yeah, Udi does the Reckless VR meetup every Saturday.
I've seen his. I've never joined though.
Yeah, you should do it. I mean, it's middle of the day on a Saturday, and I got some football to watch right now. But it was awesome in the spring, especially because everyone's locked in their damn house.
Well, Joe, it's been fantastic. Always enjoy talking to you. Send me all the links you have. I'll put them in the show notes. And I appreciate your time.
Thank you so much, buddy. I appreciate it. Appreciate what you're doing. And yeah, I'll see you soon because I'll be down your way not too long.
I hope so. Tell Clancy I said hi.
All right, buddy. Talk to you later.
Take care.